This is episode number 164 with Gene Park. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer, and my mission in life is to help school administrators fight isolation and frustration via a leadership community in order to gain clarity and find solutions to their greatest challenges. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show, I talk with Gene Park, and we explore a number of interesting topics like why Gene's custodian sings happy birthday to kids, Gene's acronym for love, do you surround yourself with people that know more than you, and an interesting model of administrator support used in Cherry Hill called the cohort model. You're really going to love that story. I mean, you're going to love this whole episode. Gene is the real deal. He has just such authentic stories about the challenges he's had and some of the ways you can overcome them. But this cohort model that Cherry Hill uses in New Jersey there, it's really interesting for the support. But we all don't have that kind of support for ourselves as school leaders. So if you find yourself out on an island, if you're isolated, and like I read earlier in my introduction, you know, that's what I do. I connect school leaders, I support them. And so if you'd like to join a thriving leadership community with people in 8 different countries on 4 different continents around the world. At the point of this recording, there's 40 members, but by the time I release, I'm sure there'll be more. We'd love to have you. So just check out the information. You go to betterleadersbetterschools.com/MM for mastermind, and you can learn more about this leadership community. Anyway, thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you really enjoy this show with Gene Park. And before we jump into the episode, let's take a few moments to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving student soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Students who participate in the Conrad Challenge don't learn to think outside the box. There is no box. Learn how innovation takes off and soars beyond the confines of a box at conradchallenge.org.
Hey, y'all. I'm Casey Bell of the Google Teacher Tribe podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I'm here with one of my new friends, Gene Park, and very excited to dig into his story. We had a great pre-chat. We've talked before we met online through Twitter, and it's going to be a great episode. So we're super pumped to bring this to you. Gene's a man of faith who trusts that all things, the good and the trials of life, happen for a reason. He is a husband to Una Park and father of 2 amazing girls. Gene has been an educator for 17 years. As a classroom teacher, Gene worked in Cherry Hill for 10 years as a second grade teacher, third grade teacher, and fifth grade teacher. He has also served as an assistant principal in Camden and Southampton, New Jersey for 3 years. Gene now serves in his dream job as the principal of A. Russell Knight Elementary, a K-5 school in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. This is his 4th year as principal of A. Russell Knight Elementary. Gene, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Danny. Great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you and be able to share my story. Really excited about it.
Absolutely. And listen, you can't put a dream job in your bio and think you'll get away without me asking about that. So we have to start there. I know we're going to get back to the story of you as a student and then, you know, as a novice administrator. But I'm curious, what makes your role at A. Russell Knight Elementary your dream job?
For me, I started as a teacher in Cherry Hill, I guess 2001, 2000. And I learned so much there. And so many people in Cherry Hill who came before me just invested in me. They gave me opportunities to grow as a classroom teacher, eventually as a leader within the building, and really prepared me well to become an administrator. And so for me, I always saw Cherry Hill as home, you know, and I did have to leave. I was an elementary guy, and we don't have vice principals in that setting. And so I remember vividly an assistant superintendent by the name of Lawyer Chapman. His story is amazing. He's actually been in education for over 50 years now and still going strong. But he sat me down and said, hey, we see value in you, but you are probably going to have to leave. You know, we have vice principalships in the middle and high school, and you're going to need to go get some experience as an administrator and then come back. And so I left with the hopes of coming back as a principal or an administrator in Cherry Hill. And when I say dream job, like that was probably a 5-year desire. And so within that, you know, I went away for about 3 years and had an opportunity to come back and got the job at Russell Knight. And it is now an absolute joy. I mean, I'll talk about some of the struggles becoming a principal, but it's a joy. I mean, I really have the trifecta when it comes down to it just student body, the families. They're so involved and do so many positive things to support their kids and the staff. And my staff, they're just rock stars, man. they really are. I'm a guy who likes to be inspired, and that pushes me when I see people who just do amazing work with kids, and I don't need to go far for inspiration. I just take a walk down the hallways, and pop in the classrooms, and so I have a very gifted, passionate group of educators that I work with, and I wouldn't say just classroom teachers. I mean, from my office staff, my custodian, he's the man. Like he goes in and sings happy birthday songs to every kid.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to show you a video and the kids love it. Like they literally seek him out to make sure that he does a happy birthday song for them. But yeah, I couldn't ask for a better place where I could grow. And my superintendent who hired me now, Dr. Joe Malosh, he's just a guy who makes choices in the best interest of kids. He's supportive and he pushes you, you know, he pushes you to grow. So it's been, like I said, it's been a dream job for me.
You know, what I love about what you shared there, the fact that a custodian's going to sing happy birthday to kids, right? Like that's not probably on the job role officially. And I don't know how common that is around the world for that to happen. But the fact that you've built or sustained a culture where he feels, you know, it reminds me of this, the idea that it takes a village, right? To raise a kid. Raise a child, and he takes his responsibility, his part, to make the school look beautiful, but also the relationship piece and the fact that the kids seek him out on their special day, you know, they want to participate in that. That's a pretty cool thing about your school.
Nah, Daddy, Danny, you nailed it. Like that's one of the conversations I had with Jason. He's our head custodian. I said, hey, man, look. Your job, I know you take great pride in making our school beautiful and taking care of it, but your number one priority is loving kids and building relationships with them. That's your number one. So when you're in the cafeteria, how are you connecting with them? Are you sitting out kids who you know may be struggling in the classroom, whether it's behaviorally or academically? You need to know those things. And he's embraced it to the point where literally when we had our kindergarten visitation orientation day. This is their first experience in our school before they even become kindergartners. And I call on him. I'm like, hey, I want you to be a greeter. The kids see you all the time. The parents see you all the time. I want you to be introduced and I want you to greet them as they come in because you're a face that matters. So he's a great example of somebody being a leader who's not a classroom teacher.
Right. And it doesn't matter the title. Very cool. Before we move on to your story as a student, one other thing that was really interesting to me that you shared is the importance of investment in people. You talked about how when you were a teacher, they really invested in you in Cherry Hill, which is why you wanted to come back. So I'm curious, can you unpack that a bit? Like, what did the investment look like for you? Because maybe some of the listeners can then translate that to something they can offer others in their role as a leader in the school.
Yeah, I would say my principal, my last principal, when I was a classroom teacher, Bob Homer, he loved his people. I mean, he was in my classroom all the time. He always checked on me, and not just professionally, but personally. Like, he cared about my life as a dad, my life as a husband. He checked on how my family was doing in general. But then he also cared in regards to making me better as a teacher. I mean, this is the guy who made me want to be a principal. He not only supported me, but when I watched him, he made the principalship appealing. I mean, he knew every kid. He engaged his staff. People wanted to follow his lead, and he would also provide our voice in the decisions that he was making. And so I would say that investment is, you check on people, you see what they need. And then the last piece is, he provided a platform for me to get better and take on a leadership role. And, you know, often people think leadership means administration. I don't think he was looking at it like that. I think he just wanted me to be a leader in the setting that I was in at the moment, because he knew it was good for me, the school, and kids. And eventually it led to me going into administration, but he gave me opportunities to lead as a classroom teacher.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And just being able to see the potential in people and calling sort of those gifts out of them, a lot of times awakens sort of this giant within. And you've seen that a bit in your own leadership story. Speaking of stories, I know your story as a student is very important to you. So could you share some of those highlights for us, what you wanted to share?
Yeah. So I think growing up, school was just, and you hear this often, like, school was just something I had to get through and do. I did well academically. I knew what boxes I had to check off. I knew what I was looking to get an A. And I think I had good relationships with my teachers. But for me, school really was a place. What I valued in it was the social interactions with my peers, with the adults as well, and sports. And it was always interesting now looking back on who I was as a kid and just how different my mindset was when it came to sports and friendships versus academics. So I think with sports, especially, I really had a growth mindset. I wasn't the best athlete. I wasn't the fastest. What didn't have the best sports knowledge when competing, but I always believed and knew that I could outwork people. And if I worked harder, I practiced better, I was able to be successful. And yet in academics, I never had that passion. Like, I did well, honor roll, but no real desire or purpose to get better. It was more to just get through and check things off. You know, high school went well. Went to college because I think you hear Don Wetrich talk about the need to go to college. And like, for me, I went because that's what everybody did, right? So, and to the point where for me, I just needed to get into a college. So I applied to Penn State. I applied to Penn State because they had a good football team. And I actually visited with a friend one time, and that's all I knew. So I was like, I'll apply to Penn State. And then I'll apply to NC State since my best friend's applying there. And that was it. Fortunately, I got in. But again, I went to college and it was just, let me check off the boxes. But along the way, I think the best thing that could have happened to me was a significant family trial. And so my mom and dad owned a grocery for years, decades, almost 30 years, and a restaurant. And they just, the business just went south. And so I needed to go get a job, and I happened to get a chance to work at a daycare center, and I fell in love with it. Like, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And we're talking like junior year, should probably figure something out. And this fell in my lap. Loved being around kids, and then decided I would apply for a master's in education and got into Temple and found my passion, man. That was it. Like, I had not, there was nothing that I really had a purpose for as a young adult. And this was it. Like, I knew I found my niche, fell in love with it, became a classroom teacher. And that was all she wrote. I found just great joy in the work and knew that that was what I was meant to do, to serve in that capacity as an educator.
Mm. What was it about the daycare that helped you find that passion and find your niche?
There's this, can't even remember the guy's name, but he was a young guy. I think just about going into the classroom, and he loved it. Like, he loved planning. He was engaging. The kids loved him. And for me, relationally, I found that I was very good at interacting with kids. And I felt very comfortable in that setting. I felt drawn to them. And I think when you're drawn to something, often they're drawn back to you. And so I just found great joy in the relational piece.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You know, and you talked about earlier, just even with that conversation you had with your head custodian, listen, your number one job is to build relationships with kids, right? And so that was sort of maybe unlocked for you, or it was your epiphany or aha moment, light bulb moment, working in the daycare. But that's cool. I really appreciate you sharing that. In the pre-chat, I know you mentioned that you had a challenging first 2 years as well as principal. And so can you share that story and any tips you have for the listeners on how to get through the challenging times? Because I'll tell you what, you know, I'm in some Facebook groups with principals, and, you know, we're in Voxer groups and that kind of thing. The challenge, the struggle is real, right? It is for the school administrator, especially for the newbie. And sometimes I read these painful stories just with a smile on my face. It sounds a little sick, but it's because I know they're going to get through it. And it's just kind of funny to relive some of the ways we put our foot in our mouth, or, you know, just stupid things we did or whatever. So I'll be quiet here. This is about you. Let me hear, you know, what challenges you had and then the tips you have for listeners.
Now you nailed it. I remember people telling me, hey, it'll get better in like 5 years.
I promise. and
when they say in like 5 years, I'm like, whoa, 5 years. All right. That means I need to make it. That's okay. That's encouraging to know it's going to get better, but 5 years, that's not encouraging, but it did. And so, you know, when I became a vice principal, I will tell you, I love that job because, again, what's that song by the Rolling Stones? You can't always get what you want.
Yeah.
Right. But if you try, sometimes you get what you need. And I didn't want to leave Cherry Hill, but I did, and got to go to Camden, which was so different. You know, most of my kids were African-American. You're talking high poverty rate, very different from Cherry Hill, which is a suburbs, pretty affluent community. And then I had a chance to go to Southampton, which was rural and almost like probably 92% Caucasian. Again, a different community from Camden. But in my vice principal experience, got to see different demographics, got to see different age groups because I had opportunities to be with middle schoolers. And what I learned there was that no matter what age group, no matter what background, ethnicity, race, religion that kids come from, that relationships matter, and that every kid understands the language of love. And that was a huge lesson for me. Whether it was Cherry Hill, Camden, or Southampton, if you loved them, they were with you and they would work for you and then eventually work for themselves. And I always use that. It's something that works for me is I use an acronym for love. And what you love, L, you learn about it. O, you observe and study it. V, you value it through your thoughts and actions. And then E, you empower them, right? You release them and hope that they embrace who they are and want to make a difference in the world. But that was my biggest lesson there. Love the vice principalship. So I figured principalships, I'm ready for it. Man, I get in and I get my dream job, right? I'm so excited. I want to make a difference. And I go in and my first year was just rough. I'm failing left and right, stumbling, learning that this is a position where you can't make everybody happy. And I think what made it even harder for me those first couple of years, because I would say year two was even harder, right? Because year one, you have the number one excuse you can have is, well, it's my first year. I'm learning. That people have put things in place. Year two, that's gone, buddy. Yeah. Like, you don't have that anymore. If you allow things to stay that someone else put in, that's on you, right? And the changes that you've implemented now, that's on you. So year two was even harder. But I would say it made it even more difficult because I had been praying and hoping for this job for 5 years and I got it. And it just wasn't what I thought it would be. You know, I wasn't finding joy in my work. I learned very quickly that being number two was a great job. I valued the vice principalship even more. And to some extent, Danny, I would tell you that I wanted to quit the position. And I think some of the challenges that came were, it was the first time really being on an island for me as an administrator. In the middle school setting, you're a vice principal and you have other vice principals and your principal. I no longer had that. I was on my own in the building with no other administrator. It's the first time being your lead learner and the lead decision maker in the building. And I would say that I'm naturally a people pleaser. And it's funny how God puts a people pleaser in a position where you can never really please everyone. That was a hard lesson for me to learn over the past really 4 years. And I think I'm in a good place now. But being a people pleaser, it was really the first time I wasn't finding joy in this work. And it matters. You need to be joyful in the work that we do because the work we do is incredibly important, right? So if we're investing in the hearts and minds of kids, like that's what my mom always wanted me to be a doctor. And years after I became a teacher, I said, Mom, I did you one better. I do heart surgery and brain surgery every day. And on many clients who don't want me to do it, you know? But if you can't find joy in this kind of work that's so hard, you're not going to be able to invest well into the people who are most important, the kids and the staff who care for them. So those were my trials. And I think the things that helped me overcome those challenges, I would say I definitely had to make some intentional choices, but I also believe that I had very fortunate circumstances. What's that book, Outliers? Is it Gladwell?
Yeah, Malcolm Gladwell.
Right. Malcolm Gladwell, I think, talks about like you have those people who are incredible outliers, but yes, they worked hard. And yet there were many circumstances that helped them to be great. And so I made intentional choices by surrounding myself with people who I knew. They knew more than me. They were more experienced, like-minded philosophically. I made the choice to really dig in and be more reflective at the end of my second year. And there's something powerful about looking inward in order to maximize your outward impact on other people. And by reflecting, I remember my why. I'd forgotten. I really lost my way in the first 2 years. I think when you're a people pleaser, it sounds like you're outward thinker, but really you're selfish. And so I wanted to be a people pleaser because I wanted people to like me and respect me and have positive thoughts for me. And that became more of a priority than doing what's right for kids and my staff. But when I remember my why, this is why I do the work, it really changed my trajectory and my decision making and how I process things when things might not go my way or the way I had envisioned it. And the reflection also helped me, I think everybody would benefit from, if you have a lens, if you see trials and challenges in life, professionally or personally, as a tool for refining yourself as a leader and as a human being, really developing a growth mindset, I think it changes the way you respond to the world, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to fail. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to stumble. And those pieces helped me, right? Intentionally making those decisions. But the good fortune part for me was this, in Cherry Hill, they have a cohort model. So we have 12 elementary schools, but what they do is they pair you up, four principals and then two central administration staff, where we become a cohort and work together for years. And I happen to be surrounded. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, especially when it's even more valuable when you don't have any other administrators in your building. And so I got put in a cohort where two new guys came in, but they had experience, Sean Sweeney, Jared Peltzman, and Kirk Rickensrud, who's like a big brother. He was the experienced one in there, but we were philosophically aligned and they just pushed me to get better and encouraged me. So we, that whole piece too, I could talk about the cohort model for so forever, because it's been such a great benefit for me. But those guys started as my colleagues, but they became personal friends who happened to be my colleagues. Mm-hmm. And that really helped me grow. The other feedback I'd give folks in any position or whatever you do, to surround yourself with counselors outside of school, wise counselors, mentors. I had friends, I had pastors who I knew and trusted would give me good insight. And again, good fortune for me, my superintendent, he's just a man who was able to see more in me in that when I was struggling than I could see in myself. And I'll never forget, in year two, near the end, I scheduled time to meet with him. It was 5 o'clock at night. He spent an hour with me. And in all honesty, Danny, I probably wanted, I'm true to myself, I probably wanted him to kind of say, you know what, Gene, you're probably not cut out for this, but he didn't. Mm. He didn't let me off the hook. He said, hey, you were my guy when I hired you, and you're my guy now. And we're a big district, and if this isn't your fit, then we'll find something, but I think you're my guy. And that was a huge turning point for me. Mm. And my last man is, I married well. Like, I have a wife who's my best friend and my counselor and encourager. Yeah. And when I was struggling, she was like my liver. You know, like, I would come home and it would just be, oh, woe is me, woe is me. And she just never gave up believing in me. And one thing that really was helpful, she gave me a choice. She said, look, I want you to find joy in your work. Mm-hmm. And if that means a different position, I'm good with that. So if you want to go back into the classroom, go. If you want to look for a vice principalship, go. I will support you. And so I knew going to year three, I had all those things. And so I made an intentional decision. I'm going to give everything and be me, right? And knowing my purpose to serve children and my staff, even if the decisions that I make might not make everyone happy, that's how I was going to make year three. And if I still really disliked the job, then I would look. My wife had released me. She gave me a choice. And I can tell you, man, my year three and four, I found my groove. My trajectory has changed. I'm learning a lot of things and really seeing growth as incremental, right? Like, I don't need to change the world in a day. Learn to slow down. I'm learning to hear more teacher voice and providing them ownership of their learning. And most importantly, I'm just finding joy in the work, absolute joy in it. I get excited when I get up in the morning. I get excited when I walk in the building. I get excited about summer, but not because people are leaving, because I get to plan for September. I'm excited about September. And one of the greatest rewards for me is that I think I'm finding so much joy in my work. My wife is actually deciding to go for her administrative degree.
Oh, wow.
A degree in administration.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm just super proud of her. And I also feel like if I was miserable in my job, she would not do that. And yet she's seeing me find great joy in it and wanting to have an impact that way. So that's my story. It's
Love
been
it.
A great one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, thank you just for being so authentic there and digging into that story. And there's so much to pull apart, but two things I really want to make sure the listeners heard is just you always have options. So even when it seems really dark and challenging and tough, like there's options out there, and your wife really helped you see that. But the superintendent did as well, which gets me to the second point, which is encouraging your people, right? And seeing their potential and speaking positive things into their life. You know, what a message to hear from the superintendent that, okay, yeah, maybe this year is tough, or it's, you know, you're having a challenge or whatever, but you're my guy and the district's big, we'll find a spot for you. As opposed to, hey, new principal, yeah, you're having a hard year and you're out, you know? Like,
yeah.
And that's what we think we're going to hear. And that's what a lot of principals hear. But to get a different story was pretty amazing. So thank you so much for sharing that. And I think let's pause here for just a second and get a message from our sponsors. Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. All right, and we're back with Gene Park, who's just dropping so much value with authentic stories and telling, you know, where he came from as a student. The college experience, teaching, vice principal, and then principal. So this has been a wonderful interview. And to wrap up the last third here of the podcast, Gene, what's one book, video, tool, or other resource that has really impacted your leadership, productivity, or quality of life in the past year?
I'm definitely a Bible reader. So part of my routine every morning, I read for about 30 minutes to an hour. That's always had an impact on my life. And I would say professionally, a couple books, man. Culturized by Jimmy Cassis. Awesome. So in line with the way I see the world and education. 4 o'clock Faculty by Rich Ches. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. Great book. I'm really being pushed by what he's sharing in there in regards to just making PD more relevant for my staff. I want them to be excited about it, not, here's another faculty meeting. And the last book that I've recently read, and I think you guys have read in your masterminds, Danny, is A Power of Moments by Dan and Chip Heath.
Yep.
A great message there. Hey, we need to make our moments happen. So those would be three books. And then Twitter is a huge piece for me. Like Love Hatch, Edgy Gladiators, PLN 365, Principles in Action, and Joyful Leaders.
Yeah, those are all excellent, excellent hashtags to follow and incredible books for you to recommend too. We'll link those up for everybody in the show notes. And Gene, you know, you've made it. This is a big question, so I'm going to give you plenty of time and space, but you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. So how would you build your dream school and what would be your top three priorities?
That's a huge question. And would love to have somebody actually really ask me that. But I would say I want a building that's welcoming and engaging. I want kids and people to walk in and go, wow, like I want to be here. Lots of windows, lots of natural light. I would want public areas for learning, like really make your media center a place that could be the hub. And even other just public learning spaces where teachers could actually take kids outside of their classroom and just have a different learning experience. Outdoor learning spaces, I would love to invest in that piece where kids could go outside. You can take them outside and enjoy nature as you learn and grow academically. I would build more recess and movement into every day. We typically have recess midday. I would love to have it built in throughout the day where even if it's a 10-minute time for kids to just decompress and run and play and then come back in and re-engage in the hard work they do in the classroom, I think would be huge. And then for adults, I would want built in time for professional development. And we do have that in Cherry Hill where we have 8:15 to 8:45 every morning, 30 minutes, where you can work in grade levels or departments. But I would want PD time built into the contractual times that are available. So even if it was like half days where the kids went home and we had a half day every month where we could really dig in and grow professionally. And within that time, not administrator driven, but I'd also want where they have passion projects like Google. Hey, what are you passionate about as a teacher? Mm-hmm. You have time every week to learn about that and to grow it and to plan and implement. And last would be expectations that teachers would visit classrooms and learn from one another. But I think you need to structure the school where we would be allowed to bring in subs, or we would have things set up where people would be able to provide coverage for your classroom. And maybe the administrator is the one who does that. but that would be an expectation within that culture. You're going to go and watch and learn and give each other feedback. So that's it. It's a lot to ask.
Gene, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is through Twitter, Mr. Eugene Park, and Voxer works as well. It's Principal Park. And last words of advice, I would say find joy in your work and to believe and know that life is bigger than you or me and that it's about investing in others. So that's it. That would be the message.
Love it. Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this show. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Gene. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Gene in the search bar. In the show notes page will pop up the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, all the books, including also that Rolling Stones song. I'm going to find a link to that as well. And the best way to connect. Gene, thanks so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks for having me, Danny.
All right, Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. I created a new resource for you called The 3 Leadership Questions I Ask Every Day. You can download the resource by visiting betterleadersbetterschools.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. This helps me in a few ways. It gives the show some social proof. It encourages new people to listen to the show, and it improves the ranking of the show and therefore helps me serve more school leaders. If you want extra credit and some good vibes, share your biggest takeaway from the show and tag me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer, and make sure to use the hashtag BLBS. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Join over 3,000 school leaders that get this resource delivered every week. In the weekend resource, I share content curated specifically for school leaders. You'll get articles, videos, templates, and exercises, coaching tips, inspirational quotes, invitations to free Friday group coaching, which is an exclusive offer made available only to newsletter subscribers in the Better Leaders, Better Schools tribe, and links to all the content I created for you this past week. You can subscribe at betterleadersbetterschools.com/weekend-resource. And remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader.